It's the last one for the year. Christmas edition, New Year's edition, back home in Australia edition, last weekly update of 2018. This is going to be like a little bit of a zinger in some ways. Warning up front, some of the things I'm going to read may have adult themes. And frankly, some of the things I'm going to say are probably not too suitable for children because I'm going to react to a few things that you'll see what I mean. Just fair warning. It's not going to be too bad. But anyway, regardless, I've got to warn these days. So anyway, that aside, that'll come a little bit later. I am obviously back in my home in Australia. So I flew back from Whistler Christmas Eve. Actually, I left. This is how it just messes with your mind when you travel. So I left, I think I left on the 22nd and then I arrived home on the 24th. I didn't get a 23rd. So you like literally just don't get a day when you come back the other way over the dateline, which happens every time I come back from North America. So got back to Australia on Christmas Eve. Now, of course, it is hot in Australia at the moment and a lot of people I know sort of hear this and they still have trouble grasping it. And I know that you know that the world is a spherical thing and the sun's up and down an equator and everything, but people still seem to be very surprised about the fact it's a hot Christmas for us. So I did come back to a nice warm Christmas. I wouldn't actually say hot. We haven't been over 30 degrees since I got here, which is a bit unusual. That's Celsius as well, by the way. But it has been nice and warm, you know, like pool in the water, all this sort of stuff, which has been great. My poor sun-deprived body, which had been out of the sun for like 2.5 weeks, got a bit of a shock when I got back. So I got just a little bit of a rosy tinge the other day, which is not ideal because too much sun exposure is a bit of a serious thing here as well. Now, I do have a list because there's a lot here. I got home to a couple of cool new things. And one of those cool new things is just like reams and reams and reams of Have I Been Pwned stickers. In fact, I got back to 1,000 Have I Been Pwned stickers, and these are super cool. Now, I had actually seen these on other people's laptops because I'd tweeted photos to me whilst I was away because they had also gone and ordered them from Sticker Mule. I've linked to that in a previous post. Google my name, Sticker Mule, you'll find it. And it was actually kind of cool to actually see them myself. So that the stickers themselves, for those of you watching and not listening, look about like that. In fact, if I put it up there, then that can be the one that I put in the static image for the video. Just a little Have I Been Pwned blue sticker. It's a very sort of wide, low kind of sticker, and I have a perfect place on my laptop for that one to go. Now, I will be carrying those with me on my travels and handing them out as I go. For everyone else, if you want them again, find that blog post where you can download the template from GitHub, whack them in the Sticker Mule, they will send you your own. And if you do that and you can give them to other people, like at user groups or conferences and things, that would be enormously appreciative. Appreciated. Anyway, so moving on. The other thing that was waiting for me, and this is where I'm going to start what I hope is interesting to some people, but also ranting a little bit about some other stuff, is we got a new car. And some of you know that I am a car person. I do really enjoy cars. It is probably my one financial vice, I would say. Like some people like nice clothes or things like that. I do like cars. And we decided to replace our C63S Mercedes AMG with an E63S Mercedes AMG, which is a larger car with a whole bunch of other bits and pieces I'm going to talk about in a moment. And I want to kind of break this section down a little bit because I want to talk a little bit about why we chose this car, and apologies to non-car people, but bear with me, I am going somewhere with this that might be relevant to you as well, why I did not choose a Tesla, and also I want to just chat a little bit about the green side of things, because this is where things started getting a bit weird, and also I want to talk a little bit about some of the other reactions that came up, and yeah, as I said in the beginning, there is going to be a bit of language in this because it deserves a bit of language. And frankly, like I don't know if it's the holiday time or what it is, but it just seems like since the day I got back, there have been people engaging in discussions that are just like losing their freaking minds. Maybe it's like, well, they're not in the office anymore, so I actually don't need to be professional and well-behaved. I don't even know exactly what it is. Now, what I'm going to do with this car thing, I want to just sort of talk about what I shared the other day. And I'm going to link to this tweet as well, because this does sort of go into observations around how we engage with people online too. So picked the car up, took a few photos, whacked them up online and said, new family car. I'm kind of a bit excited about this one. 1,400 likes so far, which is nice. So obviously a lot of people do like this. Now, we chose the E63. It's a bigger car. It's got a bit more room. It is a twin-turbo V8, which is the same as effectively most of the Mercedes V8s these days. Certainly the AMG V8s, they're using the same base engine across a whole raft of different cars, everything from the C-Class we had before through to the GLCs and GLEs and the bigger cars, all the way through to things like the Mercedes-AMG GTs, the two-door fancy ones. And then they change internals and turbos and things like this. So the E63 has got revised internals, larger turbos. It's 450 kilowatts, 850 newton meters, which is very, very good in any sort of reasonable definition of the power and torque outputs of a combustion engine. One of the really sweet things about it is it's all-wheel drive as well. And the C63, don't get me wrong, it was hilarious fun, but being able to put power down, even in the dry, was not its strong point. Once it got wet, it just frankly sort of erred on the side of being a little bit too hairy. So the great thing about this is having all-wheel drive, you do manage to get power down to the road, which is not just safer, but it makes the car a lot nicer to handle. Also makes it a lot quicker too. So we got that. We got it in this really neat sort of matte grey colour, which I think looks sensational. We actually ordered it sight unseen. So when we finally picked it up on Christmas Eve and I saw it in the flesh, I was like, wow, this is super cool. And then you see it in the sunlight and it all changes colours and things. I guess where I'm going with this is that this thing is giving us a lot of pleasure. And when I say us, my wife as well. My wife is a car person too. She loves cars. And we really, really enjoy having time with this vehicle, as we have many others before, at all sorts of different levels of price range. So we picked the Mercedes over other competitors for a number of reasons. So other competitors would be, say, the BMW M5. Aesthetically, for me, it just has not been pleasing since Chris Bangle back in early 2000s did that weird 7 Series boot, and then everything just went downhill from there. The interiors haven't done a lot for me. And I used to love BMWs too. Never owned one, but I loved things like that E46 M3, the one that sort of started the really sculpty, curvy mirrors. They were a fantastic car, great reviews. Would have been a beautiful thing to have. But I just kind of feel like, to my eye, it just hasn't done it. Audi RS6 as well, you could have got that. Could have got that in an estate. We decided to get in a sedan. It's a good-looking car. Audi's got sensational interiors. But every single review I read that put that against the Mercedes just said, look, the Mercedes is such a better driver's car. And this is going to sort of set a bit of a scene when I talk about the Tesla things as well, because, you know, one of the things for me buying cars is I want something that I love to drive, that performs like a high-performance car should, that I feel is going to be at the top of the range of the, or the top of the competitive tree that I buy it from. And I think if I had got an RS6, every time I saw one of these, I would have kind of lamented the decision a little bit. As part of that drivability as well, it's all-wheel drive, but it can disengage the front diff, and it can go into full rear-wheel drive mode, into drift mode, which is really a track-only thing, and it may get a little bit of that time as well. Certainly, tracks have been a really, really big part of my past, so it may well see that. But again, it's kind of recognizing those driver-focused things that people who drive performance cars actually like. So the Audi really wasn't an option either. I just wasn't excited enough by it. And then there's not really a lot of other options unless you sort of go very sideways into like a Porsche Cayenne, and that's a four-wheel drive is in a big, you know, raised all-wheel drive kind of car. And I just have no interest in that. I'm not an off-roading person, and I don't think most people who buy Porsche Cayennes or Range Rovers or anything like that actually are. So this was like just the absolute perfect car for us. I'm absolutely loving driving this thing. One of the things that to me is like the killer feature of this is the noise. And it just, like all these AMG engines, even the previous ones that were 6.2 litres and they weren't turbocharged, sounded sensational. They sound beautiful as well. I'm going to play like a tiny clip here. I'm going to drop it into the video in this little clip. Now, there will be some of you who hear this and you say, wow, that is awesome and I love this and it's beautiful. And then there are some of you that hate it and think that I'm killing dinosaurs. And I'm going to come back to that, but let me play the clip just for a moment, and then I'll jump back into the video. Okay, so that excites me. That is one of the things that I like about a car. Now, this is going to start to lead us to the Tesla thing, because one of the things with cars is that they tend to be very emotional purchases. So people are buying something that just kind of resonates with them. It sort of ticks that little box in their mind that makes them love it. Now, sometimes it's going to be cars that are loud and fast like this. Other times it's going to be cars that are, let's say, more handling orientated. My wife used to have a Mazda MX-5. For those of you in America, you would call it a Miata. That is not a powerful car. It is, I think, I'm trying to remember what it was. It wasn't much more than like 100 kilowatts, you know, so like less than a quarter of the power of this. But it only weighed about a ton, had beautiful handling, two-seater, short wheelbase. It was a fun, fun car on road, fun, fun car on track as well. But it's a very different thing to this, and I wouldn't be interested in that now. Some people get very into, what's a good example here? Something like, they're Robin Reliance, aren't they? Those little three-wheeler crazy UK ones. Some people love the little three-wheeler crazy. Some people love Gogomobiles, and that's fine. I don't want a Gogomobile, but it appeals to some people because maybe it's like the kitschiness of it or something like that. They get really into that. So, you know, where I'm starting to head with this is that there are different things, surprise, surprise, that appeal to different people. Which brings me to the Tesla. Now, I find people get very emotional online when they talk about the Tesla. And I think what it is that I'm kind of straddling these two worlds where there's my car world and my motorsport world and all this sort of stuff where people are sort of car-centric first. And there is my online tech world and people are geeks and programmers and things, of which I am also. And I'm kind of going between both these worlds. When it comes to cars, I tend to be in this world, which is the former one around the motorsport and the fast cars and the noisiness and all that sort of thing. And what happens is every time I might post a photo or anything of either this car, or I do still have the Nissan GT-R as well, I find people like, why didn't you just get a Tesla? And there's a few reasons for this. And just to put it in context, I have driven several Model S's, and they're very nice cars. I've certainly been a passenger in many of them as well. You go to the Netherlands, a lot of the taxis are Tesla Model S's. So I have spent a bunch of time around them. And, you know, the first thing I'll say is that they are a pleasure to drive. They're a very, very nice car to drive. I had a lot of fun, particularly that there's like a novelty factor for me as well when I first got in the Tesla. It's like, wow, this is really weird. I don't have to turn it on. And then you don't hear it. And then the regenerative braking and the way that feels in the car, very, very different. So, you know, I totally get what the attraction is there. There are a number of things about it that just don't tick my boxes, though. And so just to start with the obvious one is the noise. You know, I just played the video clip before, which I said many people will hate. They won't like. For me, I love that. And I am sure there will be times in the future where I have electric cars and there will be no noise. I mean, let's be clear. This is the future until there's something else that will replace that. Maybe there'll be hydrogen-powered cars or something. But that will be the next step in the evolution of personal transport. So I have those things. But at the moment, it's just too important to me to have a car that actually feels engaging orally in terms of what I hear. So there's that. I find that they're very Spartan inside, and again, that appeals to some people. If you have a look at the tweet that I shared of the Mercedes, it's beautifully finished. There's carbon fiber everywhere. It's got really cool lighting that makes different colors and things all over the place, and Alcantara all over the place. Like lots of really, really nice things that again, appeal to what I look for in a car. I did find with the Tesla that particularly handling wise, like once you get well over 2 tons, you do feel that, like all the physics and all the sort of low center of gravity with batteries down the bottom, etc., in the world can't sort of overcome the physics of inertia and things like this. So certainly that suffers. If you do ever look at people taking Teslas to the track, there are really extensive reviews of people saying, look, I took it, it was fun for a lap, and then it went into limp mode. Now, in fairness as well, a lot of normal everyday cars, you're only going to get a few laps out of before brakes go up in smoke anyway, because they're just not designed for this. This is why we always had aftermarket brake pads and things like that. Different story. But they're not designed to do that. And yes, I know that some people have taken Model 3s to the track and stripped them out, and there's track-centric versions and things like this. But for the most part, the car is not designed to do that. It's to whisk you around in silence and comfort and all the rest of it. So, you know, I guess where I'm getting to in this is that there are different things that appeal to me. I had a chat to a mate of mine recently who is into Ferraris. He really, really likes Ferraris. And I had gone to a Ferrari dealership opening over here. And I sort of said, you know, look, very nice and everything, but I really like the McLaren. To me, the McLaren is the thing that just, you know, blows my mind. 720S for the people that are interested. You know, like that to me is what I would love. And he sort of made the point. He said, well, they're soulless. So, well, what do you mean soulless? It's like 720 horsepower in a 1,300 odd kilo supercar with doors that go like that is awesome. How can it be soulless? But his personal perspective of it was he sort of associated soul to something else. Now, I wanted to mention soul because as part of this online discussion that I was having, a mate of mine, Jeremiah Gosney, chimed in on it. Now, Jeremiah is a big car guy as well. He really enjoys his cars. And I know he's had things like Audis and Mercedes, etc. before, which are internal combustion engine cars. And they're noisy and fast and all the rest of it. And he made a comment here, which is where we start getting into some of the bits that aren't suitable for the kids in the car. Jeremiah said, driving an electric car is like ejaculating without orgasming. I don't care how much torque the P100D has, it's a hollow, soulless, unfulfilling experience. Told you. I mean, I told you there was going to be like some adult-related content. Now, to me, like that resonates to me. And the times I've been in the Tesla and I've gone, all right, look, let's just do 0 to 100 runs for fun. It's kind of like, wow, that was really exciting, but it's a little bit like being on a roller coaster. It's like, yeah, this is really exciting, but I just didn't feel involved in it. The other thing is, and this is what a lot of people really focus on, they go, well, you got this Mercedes, it does 0 to 100 in 3.4 seconds, you know? The Tesla only does it in like a high 2-something. You just don't do this day in and day out. And this in GTR off the shelf is a high 2, and then mine's modified as well. I tell you what, like this thing moves from 0 to 100 kilometers an hour or for a quarter mile. And you just simply don't do that. I've literally launched it hard only a few times. This is not the way we normally drive around. I think what happens is people get very, very, very focused on raw numbers. Maybe it's the geeks within us because this is what we do, right? Like we look at numbers, we see things in very, very binary fashions. But it's about so much more than that. And just as Jeremiah and myself, for that matter, don't sort of feel the soul and the engagement in the Tesla, this mate of mine didn't feel the soul in the McLaren, and for him it had to be a Ferrari. You know, like, okay, that's fine. Now, this is going to lead us to the more contentious bit, because just to wrap up on that bit, I have no problem with people being passionate about any of their cars. What I do start to have a problem with is when people start getting critical about your choice and calling you all sorts of unpleasant things, which leads me to the greenie discussion. So, there were several people. Now, again, like out of the 1,400 odd likes of the tweet, there were literally like a single hand number of people that got very upset about the dolphins or the environment or whatever else it may be. And they kind of say, yeah, how can you be so irresponsible buying a polluting car? You know, you should go and get, I think inevitably they were saying a Tesla as well, but I assume maybe a Prius or Prius, if you say it that way, or some other EV kind of car. Now, I want to make several points on this. And the first one is, and this is the language warning again, it really pissed me off when someone sees a tweet where I am excited about something, which to me is a big achievement and something I'm enjoying very much. And they turn around with a proverbial fuck you saying, you're killing the dolphins. You know, like, can you not see this is something that I'm excited about? And it is, in fairness as well, the most efficient version of the car that has ever been created by Mercedes. And yes, I could have got something much smaller, but it also has cylinder deactivation, all sorts of other emissions controls and things like this. I mean, it's a long, long, long way down the path of evolution of reducing the pollution of a modern combustion engine. So why people need that, sort of feel the need to go out and be derogatory about that, it just, like, I'm just not sure what's going on there. The other thing is that it is very different in Australia to other parts of the world. You know, not just because we're in summer now. But there are many things that make it quite different as it relates to EVs. Now, there are very, very few EVs in Australia. Now, I'll give you sort of a comparison here. I go to Norway a lot. You go to Norway, just about every second car is an EV, and every second one of those is a Tesla. They are everywhere. And I think, someone will correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think Norway has the greatest saturation of Teslas per head, anywhere in the world. So they're massive there. Now, there's several things that make it make a lot more sense in a place like Norway. So the Norwegians actually, tangentially, kind of funny. Like, Norway's got a lot of money because they found oil. I think it was about the 60s again, tell me if I'm wrong. Found oil. They're pumping all this oil out of the sea. They've become very, very rich out of it. But then they've gone, we really don't want people driving internal combustion engines because they pollute. Let's sell the oil to other countries, and we're going to provide massive financial incentives for people to drive EVs. And I believe it's a combination of incentives to drive EVs and effectively penalties to drive internal combustion engines. Very green-centric view of things. Good on them for that, because it is the right thing for a government to do to sort of move us forward in this way. So you see a heap of them there because they make financial sense. Great infrastructure too. You go to a lot of shopping centers, a lot of parking bays, and there's electric chargers everywhere. Not necessarily Tesla superchargers, but electric charging points for cars. I cannot think of ever having seen one anywhere in Australia. And I'm sure someone will pop up and go, yeah, look, like in Bondi in Sydney, in sort of the heart of a metropolis, there's a place where you can find one. There's definitely none that I've ever seen here on the Gold Coast. And since I left Sydney 3 and a bit years ago, I cannot recall ever seeing one there as well. So we don't have that side of things. The other thing is, and I did look up these figures, because if I didn't look them up, someone would tell me I'm wrong. Renewable energy by country. Norway has 97% of their energy from renewable sources. Remember, they just sell the oil to other people. 97% of their energy. Australia has 14%. So I could go and get a Tesla or a Prius. Let's be clear, there are many other electric cars now, and all the manufacturers are coming out with them too. I could go and get an EV, and I'd come home and then I'd plug it in, and the power would come down the tube from the coal, which had fired up the power plant. Now, this is not to say that it isn't still more fuel efficient or more environmentally friendly than going and buying a twin turbo V8. My point is, it's not quite as simple as saying, look, you're just going to go and buy this car and, oh, it's all renewable energy and everything's fine. That's just simply not how it works. Very coincidentally, like literally 5 minutes before recording this video, I picked up this edition of the Wheels magazine from my letterbox. It arrived just in time. And for those of you listening rather than watching, this is Wheels Magazines. This is probably Australia's oldest, most prestigious, most prominent motoring mag. There's a Tesla Model 3 on the front, and the headline is The Truth About Electric Cars and Why Australia Isn't Ready. And I only had a quick flick through, but there's a lot in there about everything from the availability of electric charging stations through to the reliability of them. They were finding lots of them that just simply weren't working or had other problems. Through to the fact that, yes, we have big distances, and yes, we do a lot of short trips as well, though, but there's still this range anxiety that people have. And then you'd have to go to particular places and charge and all sort of stuff. And frankly, all problems that we are going to overcome. You know, like, this is just a transitional thing along the way. But this is how it is now. And it's, you know what I kept thinking of? I kept thinking of every now and then, there will be someone who pops up online from England and gets very upset that sometimes Australians eat kangaroos. And they say, oh, you shouldn't eat the kangaroos. You're killing the kangaroos. I didn't check this in advance. How many kangaroos are in Australia? 44 million. So just for reference, there's like twice as many kangaroos in Australia as what there are people. Now, of course, some of them, in fact, this is interesting. Well, I should have done my research on this. Back in 2009, there were only 27 million kangaroos. In fact, the headline here says kangaroo population skyrockets in Australia, so experts say they should be eaten. Now, I didn't necessarily mean to get from like EVs to eating kangaroos in just one like little leap like that, but the point I'm trying to make is it's very easy for people in other parts of the world to pop up and say, you should do things differently because that's the way they are in our part of the world. They don't have a kangaroo population problem in the UK, therefore they want to protect the kangaroos that they have. It's very different here, as is the EV thing. Now, again, like I got pretty pissed off that there was, from a small percentage of people, this assertion that you've bought this car and you're killing the environment. And it's, you know, comments like, yeah, I want my children to have a future, you're killing their future. Seriously, fuck you. I mean, that's just such a stupid, inane thing to say, and it totally neglects any of the other things that might be done either in Australia in general or here in my own household that are very eco-friendly and very green-centric. One of the beautiful things we got about Australia is it is such a pristine place. It is really beautiful, particularly here on the Gold Coast as well. We don't see any pollution or anything like we see in Sydney. We've got a lot of clean waterways. You would have seen some of the photos. It's beautiful, and we do put a lot of effort into taking care of it. So to have responses like that is just really disheartening, particularly when it's in response to something that I was obviously excited about and very happy about. So, yeah, look, it's just honestly not cool. Couple of other final comments on this because it's going to lead to something I'm going to talk about later on. There are a couple of comments of people who, I think the best way to explain it is, were unhappy with my success that I would have the option to go and buy this. Now, it's not entirely clear whether they were unhappy about that or whether they were unhappy with the fact that after I did it, I shared it. I do know that there was one person who popped up and said, look, I'd rather you just talk about InfoSec. And I'm like, look, I'm going to talk about cars and beers and beaches. And this is me. It's like it's my account. This is the organic Troy Hunt. If you don't like it, I totally understand if you leave and you go and follow someone else who only talks about what you want to talk them to talk about. So I do find it odd when people jump up online and they try to almost sort of project onto you what they would like you to reflect back to them. This is not how social media works. You know, I put a huge amount of effort into being organic and honest and natural on my accounts, and there's never anything on there which doesn't genuinely come from me and reflect my thoughts. I've talked before about the way people will promote products or things like this, or you know, non-genuine reflections of what their actual interests are. So I'm not going to go down that road. Someone actually got upset about me because I retweeted the tweet as well. Apparently, you're not meant to retweet your own tweet. Now, sometimes I do this, and I'll tell you why I do this. I do this when the tweet itself gets a lot of interest and a lot of engagement, and I retweet it on a different time zone. Because again, we've had the discussion about the way the world is spherical, etc. If I tweet something, let's say it's 2:20 in the afternoon here, basically everywhere in the world is asleep. I'd probably avoid this. So I might tweet it in a few hours from now after the UK and Europe has woken up. And then I'll wait until my morning, which is in the afternoon in the US, and I'll retweet it because then people see it. And if I've tweeted something and lots of people are engaging with it and for the vast majority of them actually liking it, then I'm going to retweet it because people like it. So I don't understand why that's a problem. Anyway, so there was that bit. Now, let's go on to something else. I'm going to come, just remember the point here about people being unhappy about seeing success or a display of success, because I'm going to come back to that. There was another blow up this morning. Actually, you know what? I will touch on this other one. There's one I was going to skip here, but I don't want to skip it because frankly, this was annoying as well. And it segues from Tesla well. There's this video that's gone really viral. Where there's a couple of guys sitting in a car in a service station, and there's someone in front of them in a Tesla, and they're trying to put gas into the Tesla. Now, I defy anyone with a sense of humor not to see that and laugh and go, this is kind of hilarious, trying to put gas in a Tesla, given all the discussions we've just had about the fact that Tesla by design are meant to be green and all this, or, you know, by design do hopefully take green energy, only if you're in Norway, or at least if you're not in Australia. So this is a hilarious video, and I've seen it shared multiple times all over the place in different forums and channels and reproduced and all the sorts of things that happens through viral video. I shared this one, and I shared the video, linked to YouTube, and my comment here was, it's the laughter of the two guys that makes this work so well, because the guys in the car in the service station are just absolutely pissing themselves laughing at this person trying to put gas in their car. And you know, when you hear other people laughing at something, somehow it just becomes even funnier. And these guys are like hysterically laughing. Eventually, one of them gets out and they go up to the person and they help them out. And you can't hear the audio because they're outside the car in the service station. But they're obviously explaining, look, you've actually bought an electric vehicle. You don't put gas in it. You've got to go home, plug it into the PowerPoint or find a supercharger somewhere. Someone just realized this ties into the last comment about what I tweet. Someone tweeted me and said, I don't follow for your misogyny. I think she meant I don't follow you for your misogyny. And in, I guess, something I knew but hadn't thought about is that the person filling the car or attempting to fill the car with gas was a woman. And up until that point, I was like, hey, isn't it funny? Someone's trying to put petrol in their Tesla. And then suddenly, somehow, this is... I got kind of lost on that. So I just kind of said, look, I don't discriminate based on who's doing the dumb things. And I think people will agree that I share dumb things done by a lot of different people. In fact, probably because of the gender bias within this industry, I share a lot more dumb stuff done by guys and girls. And holy shit, we do some dumb stuff, trust me. It just kind of bugged me because I'm very conscious in this industry at the moment about inclusiveness and about trying to make sure that we don't sort of personify stereotypes in a negative way and things like this. But it's really hard when at the same time there are just normal people doing normal things and somehow someone expects you to try and sort of filter that down based on their gender or possibly their ethnicity or something else like that. So I just found that an extremely weird comment, and it is one I've seen several times, and I would really love to actually try and write something sensible about this one day, but honestly, it scares the shit out of me even talking about some of this stuff because it can so easily just spiral out of control. So look, you know, hopefully this was just a case of a person having a bad day and, you know, wanting to proverbially kick the dog. Certainly I didn't mean to intend to imply that because it was a woman filling the car, it was funnier. Frankly, whoever it was, I think it was funny. And the funniest thing of all of it was the laugh from the other guys. Now, because I'm not done with people getting angry at me, holy shit. I don't know, like, is it a Christmas thing? Maybe everyone's just drunk. Maybe that's it. I wake up to a Twitter thread this morning, and we're going to divide this in two parts. We'll talk about the sort of simple mechanics and the technology of it, and then we'll talk about emotional reactions and things. But effectively, the Twitter thread boiled down to someone with a website that didn't have HTTPS, some people saying, look, you actually really need HTTPS on it, and the owner of this website being somewhat defendant of not having HTTPS. And basically, and I will link to the part of the tweet thread, and you can sort of make your own mind up about it. Basically, it seemed that his position was, I don't want HTTPS because Google. And there's a really interesting thing here, and I've spoken about this many times before, where there is a school of thought amongst opponents of HTTPS that Google is driving the world towards their dystopian view of, we want everything to work this way and you have to play nice, and we're going to do this by Chrome flagging insecure sites as being insecure. So we've seen this thing over and over and over again this year. So this person was very unhappy about this, and they said, you know, look, I don't need HTTPS. And we got into one of these discussions which, at least in my experience, always starts politely. And, you know, I think I said something along the lines of, you know, can you explain why it is you don't think you need it, you know? Or it might have been, why would you not have it, you know? Because it's like it's free. It takes a few minutes to set up. You get a whole bunch of cool stuff out of it, everything from, you know, obviously the security sides of it, but better support by browsers for different features and things. Better SEO, better performance, via Brotli compression, things like that. There's just all these really, really, really good reasons. And somewhere along the line here, things kind of went off the rails. Now, they went off the rails because, that's right, I can't click on the tweet because I've been blocked. We'll talk about that in a moment. Went off the rails, I think, firstly by Scott Helm. So this person, Jason Scott, Jason runs a, what does he do? Proprietor of textfiles.com. I'm not quite sure exactly what that is. It's some sort of archive of content. At some point, Jason said, anyone who thinks that SSL gives you privacy deserves to be working at Google. And I'm really not sure how you deserve to be working at Google, or how you could think that secure sockets layer, which protects communication from eavesdropping or modification by intermediaries, somehow does not give you privacy. Well, obviously it does. And Scott replied, he said, can you explain how SSL doesn't give you privacy? Now, I want to sort of focus on this for a moment, because just watch the way these conversations unfold. And again, I've seen it over and over again, not just with this bloke, but with other people in the past. Dave Weiner is a very famous person for such engagements as well. And the discussion basically ended up going the same way with me as well. So Scott has very cordially said, "Can you explain?" That is it. And this bloke's replied and said, "I get to ignore you. That's the nice part about Twitter." And I'm going to break this into two parts. I want us to be able to have technical discussions about the technical merits and the technical deficits and everything else of all the technologies. Now, if this bloke, Jason, felt that SSL doesn't give you any privacy, I think it is very reasonable to say, can you please explain how the thing that actually encrypts communication doesn't therefore lead to privacy? And really, that wasn't a very cool response. Now, Scott replied to that and said, "I didn't think you could substantiate your claim, thumbs up," and that was about it. Now, that got him blocked. He got blocked very promptly after that. And Scott later tweeted about the fact that he had been blocked. Now, I haven't actually spoken to Scott. We had a bit of a chat on a private channel. But I can imagine his frustration would have been, "Hey, I'm trying to understand what someone sees as a barrier here, and I'm also trying to help them understand how it's probably not going to be the case." And some of them turn around and given a proverbial fuck you and said, "No, you're not allowed to read my tweets anymore. You're not allowed to engage. You're not allowed to quote me," you know, things like this. And it is just such offensive sort of behavior to come out and go, "Look, you know, I'm going to block you." Like, muting is a different thing. I mute all the time. You know, if there's discussions I simply don't want to be a part of, I mute. That way they can still see my discussions. They can still quote me, do whatever they want, but it's just not something that I want to get involved in. Blocking is a very passive-aggressive behavior. So anyway, he tweeted the block. I retweeted the block. And what did I say? I said something along the lines of, "Yeah, it's really odd how we keep seeing people who decry the effectiveness of HTTPS, like literally blocking out the discussion." Now, there are a lot of likes for that tweet because I think people agree with the fact that it is a shitty thing to do. But there was also an undercurrent of people who said, "Oh, this is InfoSec Twitter being mean. InfoSec Twitter is mean. You're always being mean." And it's when you look at the way these things unfold and the fact that there's polite helpfulness done on our free time, you know, to try and help move things along in the direction that we all know that the internet really needs to go, and people respond that way, it's just bloody annoying to see reactions like that. So I don't get how it is mean, and I also think that it's almost like everyone gets very, very carried away with their feelings. You know, it's like, "I felt offended because this person said that maybe I should use SSL." Like, can we just get over like the feelings and you didn't really say this as nicely as you possibly could and actually focus on fixing the problems? You know, I vehemently disagree with anyone who said, "Oh, this is InfoSec Twitter being mean," or "I apologize for the InfoSec Twitter people." Like, no, why don't you tell the guy to pull his head in and actually do the thing properly, you know? And if you can't, or if you don't want to and you have a good reason, then fantastic. Like, share it and have a discussion. Don't just like block everyone out. This doesn't move us forward at all. So I got blocked, which is exactly the same thing that's happened with Dave, and it's happened with other people as well, where as soon as it's like, "You feel this way, can you explain why? Why do you feel this way?" And they just, I don't know, it is a really bizarre thing. Look, I guess where it all ends up is the site's showing great big warnings. In fact, one of the big problems with the site is it's got a massive Google safe browsing warning. You know, the ones that are just like the whole screen is red, and you can't miss it and you can't go through without accepting big warnings. So, you know, there's that. That's a different problem to HTTPS. And I think it has to do with the way data is archived or something like that, because the site is like an archival resource and it's probably archived some nasties that have tripped Google Safe Browsing. Incidentally, I'm sure Scott has very good contacts at Google. If Jason would actually like to get in touch with Scott and say, "Hey, can you help me sort of sort this thing out?" Because there's probably a very good reason why he has things on there that might trip Safe Browsing. So it's just, why do people have to be that way online? You know, like I've said this so many times before where it's almost like I feel like sometimes I'm talking to my kids. But you say things like, you know, don't behave to people online like you wouldn't want to behave to them in their face. And I'm sure that in their face, you wouldn't effectively get like the IRL equivalent of someone saying, no, you're not allowed to talk to me. You know, like there would be a discussion had. And the guy's probably very polite in real life. But him and others get online and somehow they just become just irrational. And it's an odd thing. Again, maybe Christmas, maybe drunk, I don't know. Let me move on because there's one other thing I want to talk about. which is a blog post that's in draft, and it does relate to some of the things discussed today. I have had a blog post, I've had a blog post in draft now for 5 years. It must be 5 years. And I just want to get the tweet I put out about this yesterday. I've had this blog post in draft about effectively fundamental financial tips for technology professionals. And it was just sort of a collection of things that I had done over the years that had worked very well for me, and that I think also demonstrated areas where technology people in particular have an advantage. I'll give you a really good example. The technology industry pays very, very well. If you look at the industry sectors and you look at where technology is, it is way, way up there in the top. And this blog post, I've dropped in figures and studies and things to help substantiate that. I think you probably know that innately anyway, but I did want to actually sort of make sure that was clear. So I started working on that a long time ago, and after I did the tweet about the car earlier this week, there were quite a few people that came back and went, well, this is awesome, you know, like thumbs up, very, very happy, 1,400 likes. And I think I sort of got this sense that people want to know how this happens. You know, like how do you go from like writing code to having a nice car and, you know, the other things that come with that. And I wanted to sort of start finally consolidating all of this together into a blog post. And I'm gonna tell you what I said here in the tweet. So I put out this tweet, it was 19 hours ago. I've had a blog post in draft for years that's been a bit of a pet project. Fundamental financial lessons for technology professionals. Is this something you'd like to read? What would you like to see in it? I want to finally knock it out over the next few days. It's had 1,100 likes, which is a huge amount for just a little bit of text, you know, about something that doesn't even exist yet. And there was an enormous amount of positive responses to that. Now, I just want to sort of contextualize what I'm actually referring to here. This is like personal finances things. So how does an individual, through a combination of their career and obviously investments and other life strategies and things, get to the point where they get to make more choices about what they do in life of a financial nature? So it's very much around this. A lot of people have said, you know, like, can you write about how you prepare business cases and things like that? That's not really what I'm intending to do here. I don't know that I ever did a great job of that, but I do think I've done a pretty good job of the other thing. So I've mostly written the blog post. It's going to be about 10,000 words. It is a big one. If there are things that you're really interested in about how individuals, regardless of sort of their age or the point of their career or things like that, can sort of focus on financial literacy is probably the right way to put this, about how they can sort of turn what they do into something bigger in the future. You know, like, let me know what you'd like to see. I have had some very good suggestions. It has helped shape the way this blog post is going. I want to get it out on Monday, which will be New Year's Eve, because I'd like to have it available before New Year's Day, when people tend to be very reflective about their futures and where they want to go and the things they want to do. So I really hope to finish that over the next couple of days. I'm going to keep dropping stuff into it. It is, like I said, a pet project, a bit of a labor of love. There's a lot of stuff I share in there that people won't know about me, and certainly about the things that I've done in the past to be where I am today. So it is a bit of I guess, a combination of like a personal journey and trying to share information that I hope will be useful to other people. And at the very least, at least getting them thinking about it. We'll see what I say in next week's update. I think it'll get a lot of traction. I think it will be very popular. I think I will also get a bunch of shit back from people who replied to the things like the car, and then they'll be unhappy because I've been successful or something like that. I don't know. We'll see. I'm a big boy. I can deal with that. I don't need to block people or do anything like that if I don't agree with what they say. Just saying. So look, let's see how that goes. If you have ideas about what you think should be in there or what you'd like to know, again, it is very much people in the technology industry, personal financial literacy. Please let me know. A bunch of people have said things like, you know, they don't understand in the US 401k, which we would call superannuation here, and different things in other parts of the world. Basic stuff like that, which is actually really, really essential, as painful and boring as it can be. But it is very, very important stuff. So that'll be really interesting to talk about next week, because I'll have lots of feedback from people to be able to discuss as well. So they're all the things I had on my plate Actually, no, there was. There was a data breach. I forgot about that. A data breach of a service called Gold Silver. I think it was about 243,000 records in total. I actually loaded it in while I was in Canada. I mentioned last week there was one I was going to make live, and I just ran out of time. Eventually made it live yesterday. A whole bunch of data about people that signed up to, I believe, trade gold bullions, as well as signing up for newsletters and things. Just another day in data breach land. Usual sort of stuff, database dumped. A little bit different in that this one had the entire web application dumped as well. So unfortunately, all of their source code is out there too. And by out there, it is sitting on a Tor hidden service, publicly accessible to anyone. It's still there today, and it went up there several months ago now. So unfortunately for them, their data is all over the place. But again, another day in data breach land. So last thing before I wrap up, sponsor this week, the last full week of a sponsor for 2018 is Tech Fabric. So they have been a great sponsor over the course of this year. I am going to have a whole bunch of new ones next year as well. For the moment, Tech Fabric are building scalable, reliable, and secure cloud-native applications. So big thanks to those guys for their support. I believe this sponsorship has, from what I hear, worked very well for them. So I'm enormously grateful for their support and enormously happy that it has actually worked well. So that's it. I'm going to tune out now. I'm going to publish this up, put it up. Hope everyone has a super awesome new year. You will have a financial blog post to read before then. And then next week, I can talk about that in more detail in this video. Thank you very much for watching.